Do you want to do more than follow orders? Think outside of the box and manifest your dreams? Then you've come to the right show. Welcome to the award-winning podcast, Holding Down the Fort by U.S. VetWealth. I'm your host, Jen Amos, a Gold Star daughter, veteran spouse, and entrepreneur. For season 8, we continue our wonderful partnership with the Rosie Network to highlight motivational stories of personal growth, financial awareness, and autonomy in our military community. We're also excited to showcase our partnership with Blue Water Advisors. Well, we have a lot in store for you this season, so let's get started. All right, hey everyone, welcome back to another episode here at Holding Down the Fort by U.S. Vet Wealth in partnership with the Rosie Network and Blue Water Advisors. As a reminder, every Mondays, we release an episode about entrepreneurship on Mondays. And on Thursdays, we release an episode about employment tips and tricks. So for this episode, let me open up with a reflection question for you. The question is, have you ever navigated the challenges of introducing new ideas into established systems? For Moshe Kraftchow, the owner of Tree Culture, Moshe gives us a glimpse into his work in forest management and the challenges he faces in implementing his methods. Moshe shares his journey from military service to developing a method that could not only save forests, but also urban areas from the growing threat of wildfires. He educates on the importance of proper land management, the role of grazing animals in maintaining forest health, and the challenges of securing funding and permissions for his projects. He believes that his methods can be self-sustaining and even profitable for landowners. Listen to how Moshe remains committed to his work, driven to leave a healthier world for future generations while also maintaining a work-life balance. Moshe, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. This is definitely a unique conversation. I feel like what made this conversation most interesting for me is all the red tape and bureaucracy I feel like Moshe had to go through to make his business possible. And so you'll be hearing more about that in him sharing his story. So if you want to reach out to Moshe and learn more about his initiatives throughout the conversation, feel free to check out the show notes of this episode to find his contact information. You can also visit our website at holdingonthefortpodcast.com. In the search bar, put in the numbers 192, that's episode 192, and you'll be able to find his episode and get a hold of him. Other than that, I hope that you enjoy this conversation, Moshe Kraftchow's innovative approach to wildfire prevention, Tree Culture's vision for San Diego. Happy listening or watching, because this is also available on YouTube, which is available in the show notes of this episode. All right, enjoy. All right, hey everyone, welcome back to another episode here at Holding Down the Fort. I am so excited to introduce you all to Moshe Kraftchow with Tree Culture. Moshe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to talk about this with you because I feel like in a number of the conversations I've had on the show so far and the people who've been through the Service CEO program with the Rosie Network, I feel like I've seen a lot of people who've been able to like build a business and almost execute it right away. And I think in the industry that you've tapped into, you're playing the long game here. I think it's very unique compared to everyone else I've interviewed. So that being said, why don't we start by talking a little bit about Tree Culture and what that's about?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm glad to hear that so many other businesses gone through the Service to CEO program are able to jump in and have successful businesses quickly, because I'm sure that's the only moralizing way for most people to get into business. You want to succeed immediately. I thought Tree Culture would take off more quickly when I first invented the methods that I invented, looking at the problems I was there to address. Honestly, I didn't expect it to take this long, but the further along things get, the bigger the need seems to grow. Yeah. And the more connections I'm trying to bring in. And I think that what we are trying to do is rather revolutionary, and it's going to take the right time and the right combinations. And we've got growing momentum, but once it comes through, the application has a whole lot of new business ground that is completely Untapped today. So what is it we do? We are taking an approach to land management with the first approach is to reduce the high levels of risk to catastrophic wildfire that we're experiencing here in San Diego. And Tree Culture is currently focused just on San Diego County, but it's endemic on the West Coast. Fires have gone all the way up to Alaska the last several years. Across the globe, this problem is all across the Mediterranean basin. It's going up Eastern Europe the last several years. It's been going around up into France, Australia. As we know, there's some areas that are very prone to catastrophic wildfires, and there's catastrophic wildfires down on the western coast of South America. Mm-hmm. And this problem is growing. And what the problem is, in other words, it's the expansion of the deserts. So it's the process of desertification. In the process of desertification, as the desert approaches into the woodlands, part of what that looks like is frequent burning. And as the burnings become more frequently, the areas that are closer to the deserts become more desert and get inundated. And then it slowly moves in and the woodlands take repeated burnings as they diminish. So we have a lot of cities, and San Diego has woodlands all throughout the cities. There are 16 or 17 cities in the county, plus the unincorporated areas. And there's all these housing developments that have these very dry woodlands around them. There's a lot is spent on trying to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire. A lot of the efforts are going into the forests that are far away. There's controlled burns that are being employed in certain places. But there is really nothing serious being done around where human settlements are and where the homes are and where all the great risk exists. There's very, very little that's done. There is the area that is usually required to be maintained at a certain fire readiness that's from the house out to about 100 feet. But the way the city of San Diego is built, there are houses along canyons. So there's houses up on the top, and then there's canyons with dry wooded areas all the way down and that are much further out than 100 feet. So most of those areas that are natural outside of 100 feet, pretty much the requirement is don't touch it, don't do anything. Like, nobody's allowed to touch it. It's habitat protection area. But without like herds of animals going through and without anything happening, it just keeps building up kindling. And it builds up and builds up and builds up. And it can't go anywhere unless it burns or unless something else happens. So what Tree Culture is trying to do is to institute that something else happens. And leaving it alone, conservation by neglect, is showing its failures. And after about three generations of that approach, it's leading to catastrophic wildfires. It is a direct result of previous policy. But the question is what to do. It's easy to come up with a problem and show how the government's not doing this right and how everything's wrong. The question is what can be done and what can reasonably be done? Most people want there to be certain open areas for wildlife. It is beautiful. There's lots of benefits to it. So using our regular landscaping methods that we use, say, in the city that the arborists use and that everyone, you know, use in their backyards, it's just not applicable to all those vast open spaces within the city. Nor would it be a good idea. If we had to collect all the dead wood and take it into piles and grind it into mulch or take it to a dumpster, or it's just so disturbing and it would take so much work. And in the end, it really wouldn't give us a healthy ecosystem because we're pulling all of the nutrients out and leaving the soil bare. So it just wouldn't be the right approach. So we need to have a different thing that we do if we want to, one, reduce the level of catastrophic wildfire significantly so that we don't have this huge risk, and at the same time, make it healthy so that the ecosystem is healthful and has multiple species and gives food for the species that are existing there today and give refuge for the animals that we want. So we want to be able to maintain that and at the same time remove our catastrophic wildfire risk. And that is the approach that Tree Culture was invented on discovering. And what happened was I found it pretty easy to go into very disturbed wooded areas that are just completely overgrown. All the trees are tangled with each other. There's vines growing all throughout. and there's just dead material suspended up in the canopies. What I find is that there are these like cavernous like voids inside that overgrown canopy, which then leads to the chimney effect. So when a fire comes through, and as I'm really exploring the inner workings of the overgrown brush, I just see how nature is setting it up to burn. Mm-hmm. And you get that chimney effect, and you have then the fuels accumulated up in the canopy. And I'm watching the fires on TV, watching the news and watching the fires, and I see exactly what's going on. You see the fire come across the grassland, and it blows through, and it hits this little patch of woods, and you see a little bit of flare-up, and then suddenly you see these big, huge flare-ups, and sparks are flying. Well, going inside and looking at how things are naturally, I can see why that works. And the trees that are growing in that condition are all, like, overburdened. They're weighed down by vines, so they're all crooked. They're bending in different directions, and underneath is fully dark. The ground is still pretty bare, so there is very few things that are growing up. New tree shoots then have to shoot up sometimes 4, 5, 10 feet through all this dark structure, so you can't really grow a new strong woods that way. So I started with just some of the basic. Well, what would happen if I tried? And I took an axe and a machete and a pair of loppers and a handsaw and just started just sculpting out of this tangled mess of nothing. I started sculpting out the woods. And I was amazed because I'd bring the vines down to the ground and all the dead debris, I'd compact it into a topsoil. So I'd bring it down and I'd sculpt out the tree. So I'd balance them and deconflict everything. And very quickly, I could see that this makes a lot of sense. And it was very rewarding work. After spending 8 years in the Navy, I was in graduate school. And, you know, I kind of wanted to get away from it and be out in the woods. So it was perfect. I was really enjoying it. And after a while, I just really saw how well it works. So I was like, well, this is what I want to do my thesis on, and I'm going to show how this works. Well, it didn't quite go so well because no professor would take it as a project. Just they said that they need students to work on their projects, and absolutely nobody was willing to provide serious evaluation to a student project in that master's program. So after I did all of my research and I did all the coursework and I realized I wasn't going to get picked up for a thesis, it was the end of 2007 and the economy was starting to tank and all of the funding sources dried up and it was time to get back to work. So I have all my research. No professor has any ownership to the research that I did in working on this. And I've been working ever since to kind of do it as a business. Because the need is growing. And the need has been growing ever since. The last year, this has been the biggest uptick in need with the insurance companies starting to drop homeowners insurance en masse in San Diego specifically, but across several parts of the country. The amount of land that could be tended to is enormous. And if we go through the land and just do basic hygiene, go through, clean it up, deconflict the things that are growing into each other, get the dead material, put it on the ground, process it down so it's neat, then things will start growing again. It'll start getting a lot of tree shoots and start getting a lot of annuals that couldn't grow in the dark before. So if it's just left alone after that work is done, 4, 5, 6 years, and it'll kind of go back to the same fire hazard, 10 years or so, you really wouldn't be able to see that anything happened. So in order to maintain it, what it takes is like a municipal grazing plan in which people take a herd of grazers, depending on the terrain, different animals are more suitable, and drive them through at least once a year so that they trample and eat some of the grasses. People with their can like take down additional dead material. If a tree dies, you take it down. So just basic cleanup and have this herd go through the city, through these open spaces once a year. And then we could permanently remove our risk of catastrophic wildfire in the city. It will completely change the map, that whole very high fire hazard map with red all over it. The red could simply be erased if all the dead material was on the ground and everything that was up was alive. Because then if a fire came in and say if the herd comes through once a year and you have some dry grass already and it catches fire, that dry grass fire will burn through the grass and it will not catch the trees on fire. And you'll have smoldering fires that can be accessed and put out. So this is a huge problem that can be solved. And it can be solved using age-old human technology. These are not new concepts. They're new for today when people expect like a very small number of people to operate machines and chemicals and solve the problem. But machinery and chemical cannot solve this problem while retaining the ecology. So if we go in with bulldozers and we could remove the catastrophic wildfire, but that's going to bring a new problem. Next time we have a good wet rainy season, our houses are going to roll down the hills with the mud. So that's just not a solution. The solution is really to face the nature and to get the right approach to clean it up. And it's going to be a lot of work and get people out there to follow these patterns and really clean up the woods. And then you can get a small number of people that maintain it with a herd of animals and will keep it clean. And at the same time, we are now introducing a whole new economy and source of local food security. So when I'm saying that what we're trying to do is revolutionize how we deal with the land, I mean it by the most extent possible. We can turn a city like San Diego from a place that it's at high catastrophic wildfire risk, that there's nowhere outdoors for the kids to run around and play because everything's thorny and overgrown, and always at a high risk of fire. We have seven rivers that nobody goes to swim in the river because they're all overgrown and not friendly. We could change this to the most beautiful city in the world with low risk.
Yeah. Finest city in America. All right. So big problem, also big opportunity, simple old age solution. And the next natural question is, why is it not being implemented? You know, I know we talked a little bit about this offline where it may seem as though certain people want a new approach, but it's really an old approach being run by, let's say, the same people. I think that's what we talked a little bit offline. So can you tell me about that and really the red tape that we have to go through to present such a simple solution to a great problem in a place like San Diego?
Well, I can't say that I can answer to why it's not being done and why it's not adopted and implemented. That's not really the important question. If I had the solution to that, then I would have implemented it. It's a matter of inertia. Mm-hmm. Things came from here, and through our technological evolution, we lost certain things that used to be commonplace and common sense, and it was not always done right in all places. And there are many places where the land has been destroyed with herds of animals. Mm-hmm. So there is risk in doing it wrong. Mm. There are many parts of the world that people have clearly proven the capacity to just using animals and machetes and axes to turn the land into a desert within, you know, a few years. So it's not far-fetched. I look at a lot of cases, like the difference between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It's just a different in how the people practice with the resources on the land. So there is a great amount of risk. And as I mentioned, the last three generations, conservation by neglect has really been the way that was being approached because of so many ways that people and industry have gone into parts of the land. And, you know, almost all of the United States of America has been clear cut by the 1960s. So just putting people in the land is not the solution. So for a long time, we pulled people out. I was like, okay, everybody out. You know, they even pulled the Native Americans out. Said, everybody out. Mm-hmm. And they forgot that there is a role that people have in the forest, and that if we do it well, we can have a wonderful living forest. But just pulling people out isn't really the solution. And it gets much worse in like a very fragmented environment like San Diego, where you might find a deer here and there, but not enough to make a change. And there aren't the natural herds of animals that would be in other ecosystems. So there's a lot of institution that has been developed to protect the environment. And I believe that a lot of my fiercest opposition are people who really care. And they're just of that old school, like, if we just don't touch it, it'll be at its best. Mm. And it's just showing the theory to be false. But that's what academia and in government. I met with an advisor to our state senator, who the senator sent her out to come see one of my demonstration sites. I was giving a presentation, and she came up to me, and first thing she said was, you know, like, she's just here because she has to, but she definitely doesn't believe in what I'm doing. And so without even seeing anything, I got a second meeting at her office at a later time to, and I ran into her at the elevator, and she said, well, you know that the municipal code for this, I wrote it for the city when I was working for the city 30 years ago, and there's nothing you're going to tell me that's going to prove me otherwise. So I just run into this stone wall of institution.
Yeah.
But I see it starting to improve. Grazing management in general in California and in San Diego has become much more common over the last 5 years. I have a friend of mine actually that started a grazing management company, but they don't do the whole full service. There is a lot of things to know, and there's a lot of things to overcome to be able to get it funded to do it on a large enough scale. But grazing management is becoming more commonplace. And if you do the grazing management without the whole silvicultural work, it's not as effective. It doesn't really bring everything up if you don't balance the forest first. If you balance the forest first, then you bring in the animals, then you have more feed and you have a better forest. So I'm seeing like little steps that are being implemented are bringing it more into the overall consciousness. So it's more heard of. And I meet with different, the resource conservation districts and fire departments. And I've had lots of people say, oh yeah, you know, we really believe in it, but we're just here to enforce the law. So, well, that's what the fire department says. They're just an enforcement arm and they can't really state a strong opinion on any way because then it becomes political. And they're, so the contracts that are always provided, they're very specific. They're like, you have to have these certifications and you have to have, you have to do your practices in accordance with these requirements, rules, and standards. So if I'm not following those standards, I can't even bid on a contract. There's contracts for landscape management, but immediately they'll go into which types of chainsaws you can use and which type of heavy equipment and what you have to do with all the debris and what you have to do. And there's really nothing to, so I can't really bid on something that's existing. Homeowners, you know, it's a pretty small organization. If a homeowner has his area taken care of, it really doesn't reduce their risk very much because the risk is from the overall open space, you know, hundreds of feet and yards out. So you really have to take care of the overall area for it to make a real change to the risk. Homeowners associations, that's one place. And so getting that and other type of environmental stewardship organizations like the Resource Conservation District, those are places that can come up with ways to do it. So that's really what I'm working on now on getting through. So I had my first major breakthrough and I got a grant to do a demonstration project up on Mount Palomar. So I completed that last spring. And meeting with them again next week, trying to get other projects going. I have several sites in San Diego that I'm negotiating with the landowners right now to try and come up with the permissions. And then there are certain grants that are out there to pay for this type of stuff. Right now, there's more money in the economy, like in the grant economy, for fire protection and forest resilience than there has ever been before. The Inflation Reduction Act that was legislated 2 years ago, that money is finally now trickling into some of the grants that are being awarded soon. So I'm keeping my eye out on certain things and hoping to start getting it done in the city, because if I do it an hour and a half away from the city, yeah, I took visitors up there just a few days ago to show them, and hopefully we'll get it done in the city. But if we could start doing it in the city, then it'll be a lot easier. And I expect it to catch on because there are no other solutions that I've seen that come close. All the other restoration projects that I'm observing, they typically are coming in with bulldozers and removing everything that was already there and planting it new from nurseries. And they don't catch very well. And the way I do it, it's a lot of work up front, but I use all the existing species that are there and just creates a better habitat very, very quickly. And if that can be sustained and maintained, the next step is if I get enough large enough contiguous areas, the business would be able to pay for itself just on the grazing itself. And at that point, it could be a free service to the city. Past that point, what I would expect is that the tables would eventually turn back to how things have been for the vast majority of human existence, is that the grazing operators pay the landowners a tax to be allowed to graze on their lands, rather than how it is now that the landowners have to pay grazers salary so that they can go clean up their lands and they don't catch their houses on fire.
Yeah. You know, and just hearing you talk, I wanted to clarify what I said earlier about all the guests that I've interviewed so far. I think I think that your business has with the most bureaucracy than any other business I've had on the show. And there's just so many, like you said, there's that stone wall, and you've been at this for 20 years. And, you know, finally, it seems like finally there's like a little crack in the stone wall that you made. And I also am aware that, you know, this is not your full-time gig. Like, you work full-time, your wife works full-time, like, you got to feed the kids. And I'm just curious to know, how do you fit this all in? How do you fit this all in? I mean, maybe that's why it took 20 years, right? But like, tell me a little bit about that and having that persistence to make this happen and get that little crack in the stone wall.
Well, I guess I have to say first that if it wasn't for my family, I don't know that I could do it.
Love it.
I started, as I said, my basic research where I just figured out the methods and it was like, and started pursuing this was around the time my daughter was born. So then it's, you know, the pressure, we know, got to keep everything together. And I was a student full time, and then she wasn't working at the time, and school ends, no degree, or at least not a master's degree. I got my bachelor's degree about a year before that. And, you know, have to get back to work and got to keep things going. So we moved back down to San Diego and got a job in the ship repair industry, which is pretty much where I came from. My last duty station was San Diego, and I got a job in the commercial sector servicing the Navy ships. And I already knew all the processes because I was worked in the QA department in San Diego Naval Station. And then I became QA manager in a company, and I still knew some of the people that worked in the office. So it worked out. And I've been in the ship repair industry, servicing mostly Navy, Coast Guard, and MSC. And it's a blessing to be able to make enough money to live in San Diego. And I want to have a world to pass down to my kids.
Yeah.
Look at Spain. They're going into their fourth year of drought now. San Diego, or in California, we haven't seen a drought that exceeded much more than 18 months. Like, yeah, we have these deep droughts, but some places in the world really see that, you know, they're drying out. And Spain has been catching fire very frequently. They're going into their fourth year of drought. It could happen here. We could lose the entire city. I was here in 2003. I was not here in 2007, but I saw what happened. I've seen what's been happening in Northern California. I used to spend a lot of time going around those woods and watching it and talking to professors and telling people how the mechanism of these forests burning, watching the dying crowns of the trees and showing how that accumulation is and why we're going to get those giant fires. And people told me, what fires? Oh, it's never going to happen. And this is like in 2005, 2006, 2007, and the drought moved up there. And in the last 5 years, we've been getting the massive fires in Northern California. And they not just broke into Northern California, they're in British Columbia. We've been losing cities. We lost the city of Paradise. We lost the city of Lahaina. We lost the city up in British Columbia. I don't remember its name. It's huge, and it's being downplayed. And nobody feels it unless it happens to them. And it can happen to us. So, yeah, if I quit my job and I can't feed my kids, I'm going to have absolutely no energy to work on trying to fix the forest. So fortunately, I work from 6 to 2:30, and that gives me some time in the day, and I can get back at like 3, and it gives me like 2 business hours to work with some days, because I got to pick up my kids. And so I get about, you know, 1 to 2 business hours, 2 to 3 times a week, and pretty much working Sundays. So the project I had up on Mount Palomar, I did it with another guy, and I did all the labor, and he did all the monitoring, and we did all the plotting by GIS and the report. So the two of us finished that project. So I have an actual paid project at a good level, so I can have proof of prior performance. As several other things I did, not as paid projects, they don't count to anybody. I found that out. No, like volunteer stuff, none of that counts. Got to get paid for it. So I got paid for one. So hopefully I can get paid for more. And then as it starts to have pay, and it can put certain, like, get it written in, I've got arborist letters about my work. I've got a whole lot of demonstration sites. So I'm hoping that this will become my full-time job. I just need to have a large enough project. And I've got several of them in the pipeline that if they get approved, I would be able to turn in my notice. And I'm very thankful for my job now, and it's really keeping me going. And I'll be really moving on to the next level when I can turn in my notice and have a large enough project where I can hire some people and start doing and get continuous projects, because a lot can be done very quickly. Getting in and getting it done is the only thing that's going to work.
Yeah. And I think you're playing it really smart, because it's not like you're a bachelor and you can do this full time and, you know, like just eat top ramen or something to survive. Like, to me, it sounds like your family has been a driving force for you to like be as well balanced as possible and make time for this issue that you're incredibly, you know, passionate and knowledgeable about. And so I think that in a way, it's gone the pace that it needed to go for you to have a good work-life balance and time with family. And, you know, now that you got that first, you know, paid contractual work in, it sounds like now that's like the one thing you can add to your portfolio, and hopefully slowly and surely a domino effect will happen as a result of that.
I like to think of it more as growth. Yes, very much so. I learned very early on not to take setbacks, or really not to believe anything till it happens. As I said, when I first started, and it just made so much sense. The first area that I worked was so rotten. There was blackberry bushes growing through everything. There was mold throughout. There was dead trees of all kinds. And it's just like this mud puddle. And I cleaned this whole channel out. And in the springtime, this is the first time, skunk cabbages came shooting up through the duff layer that at some points were almost 6 feet thick.
Oh,
and they bolted up through, and they put these broad leaves out over the duff layer that the water would go through. And several layers of leaves were out, and then those bottom leaves died and they turned into this black material. And next thing I know, I had a running stream running across where it was there. And I was just so excited. It's like to show people, it beat all my expectations of what I was going to be able to do in a few short months with a piece of land that was so heavily disturbed. And there was this one environmental activist that came from the Klamath, and he was working on the Klamath River and the salmon runs for years and years. And he came talking to the university, and he was talking about all the different things that they were doing. And at the end, I was asking him, so about how do you evaluate overall forest health and nutrition? And like, do you look at nutritional output, like actual raw nutritional output of the forest in all forms? Do you really count that when you're looking at forest health? And he said, no, they never really thought of it in those terms, never really considered it. So I said, you know, come out to my experiment site that I have a couple, and you know, let's talk. You know, hopefully I can help, you know, work with you guys and into the Klamath River. And he came over and he looked at it and he was so excited. And he was like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. I've been doing this for 30 years. I see exactly what you're talking about. This is great. This works. We'll get back together and do something. The next week, he died of a heart attack.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That was my first big brush with disappointments. That was my first major success. Like, it was just like a miracle. Went from this nasty mud puddle to this flowing stream. And the first guy that I bring out there that's been doing this for 30 years is like all excited and then gone. And I didn't, you know, sometimes I get people that are really excited and say, oh, yeah, this is excellent, but I don't have what it takes to help. Or people that seem to have everything that it takes to help, they're going to be like, well, I can't really get involved with this. So I've had hundreds and hundreds of different interactions, some better, some worse. Most people, when they see it, they get it. The people who look at it and say, no, this is wrong, are few and far between. You know, 1 in 1,000 at most. But most people don't know how to implement it. So yeah, everything starts with one. So I did, you know, a lot of free demonstrations just to get people to look and trying and getting people to look. And I got enough people to look. I was able to get, you know, a free demonstration I did for the county, but they were all nervous that I was going to take some benefits from it. And first, I had a professor at UCSD who wrote the county a letter to support my proposal, saying that his institute was going to be involved with the project. But then the professor got a $2 million grant to do something with the supercomputer, and they no longer had time. So they never showed up. And I finished that whole project with workshops and volunteers. at just trying to prove to the county that how this can work and it can happen. And the end of the project, when I sent in, I had the report and I sent all the information in, the feedback that I got was, oh, well, our biologists think that this is a great approach and it's a real win-win for everyone. But what was the university involvement? I don't see the university involvement in the report.
My goodness.
So then I kind of had to explain that they just didn't show up, but, you know, we did it and they wouldn't allow me to continue without a bona fide academic presence. And if I don't have money, no academics are interested. So they said, oh, yeah, this looks great, but we can't sanction this unless you're part of a university. But I still have it as, you know, my past experience. Through that experience, as you know, I deepened my relationship with Resource Conservation District, and they saw my work. And during that whole process, I had them involved in monitoring it. So eventually, that led for them finding grant funding for me to do my current project up on Palomar. So things lead to one another. And I think you're very right as far as what you're saying, that, you know, maybe the world wasn't quite ready. The fire risk wasn't great enough. People weren't losing their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the need is growing and necessity dictates.
Yeah.
And hoping that the necessity is strong enough that people will start doing what seems to me like just 100% common sense. If you don't start with basic hygiene, none of the fancy stuff is going to make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds to me it's kind of trying to find the right place, right time, and staying prepared, staying ready. Because like you said, or not like you said, but you just never know when the opportunity will come. And now that they're creating more awareness around the issue, this could be your opportunity, you know? And I just want to commend you for all the no's that have come your way, essentially. All these moments that almost seem like you were gonna, you know, have that opportunity and then, you know, something happens. I just want to commend you for your persistence, your resilience, and I really hope that, you know, the industry moves in your favor, because as you said, it seems like it's starting to look that way slowly and surely.
Yeah, I thought of quitting a few times, but then I realized that I am myself and I can't quit that. And this is my own personal development and there's really nowhere for me to run from it. I see what's out there and I see what to do about it. And there's just nowhere I can go that's going to change that. Yes, there have been times where I did nothing for 8 or 9 months. And, you know, earlier on when I first got my, you know, been working, I just work sometimes, you know, on a little bit of something and then not, you know, life takes over. But more and more recently, I've had a lot more to do. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I've got a series of meetings set up moving forward. About 3 years ago, I was going to the Society of American Military Engineer meetings, which is chaired by the Commander of Naval Facilities Southwest. And mm-hmm. So we've had all the Navy facilities type people in environmental. So I meet them. I met the Commander of Naval Facilities after a series of meetings and talking to him about what I'm doing, because two bases in San Diego, Miramar and Camp Pendleton, have a lot of catastrophic wildfire problem. And as far as I'm concerned, it's also a security risk. It's a security risk for multiple reasons. One, if there's a major fire, that itself is a security risk to facilities. And it reduces the ability in Pendleton for live fire exercises often, that they have to restrict themselves due to wildfire conditions. But it's also a security risk because it's where vagrants can hide. And sometimes people cut the fences and infiltrate bases that way. So, I mean, it's a physical security concern. And there's lots of young soldiers and sailors that would be really easy to train. So we're kind of talking to him about how and what I'm doing and how it works. And at one point, it's really funny how this came down. Somebody from the Rosie Network emailed me, said, hey, I saw this opportunity might interest you. And they sent it to me. And it was an industry day announced by Naval Facilities in Balboa Park.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at that and it was for people, mainly it's for people in industry that have something to sell to the government that the government's not asking for. Because again, that's the same problem. They put in RFQs for environmental management, then they wanted to do it in accordance with all these standards. So I was telling them, you're never going to ask for what I'm offering. How do I offer this to you? And I've tried to go through the unsolicited proposal process with Naval Facilities years earlier and that ended up nowhere. So I get this announcement that was forwarded to me and I was like, well, this this looks great. I'll go. And I went to the meeting, to the industry day, and I talked to the different contracts folks and whatnot. And the commander of naval facilities pulled me aside. He says, it's you and one other guy that were asking me, you know, you're never going to ask for my thing, which prompted me to do this event. And so everybody here really needs to thank you for this. However, we can't be your first customer.
Oh my, yeah.
We're too big of a company. You're an individual. There's just absolutely no possible way that we can be your first customer. Mm. And the stuff that I did volunteer obviously doesn't count for that. So mm-hmm. he said, you need to have two proof of prior performance and then we could talk. So I'm sure he's rotated since, but the next commander of naval facilities is again going to be the chair of the ASME group. And it's a very consistent group. So hopefully I get one next contract and I could approach Naval Facilities again. And Naval Facilities owns more land than any single entity in San Diego County. And they've got lots of workforce. And that's the type of spark that can really make a change. If we could get Miramar and Camp Pendleton to clean themselves up, you bet all the rich people on the mansions, on the canyons that are about to go up in flame are going to want some of that too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just observing your tenacity. And also, I like how you said, like, I'm going to be who I'm going to be. Like, I could quit. You know, there are times where I'll take months off, but this is a form of personal development for you. You know too much to not do it. And I don't think I'm going to sit here and say, you know, my best wishes. It's more like I just want to recognize the effort, the continual effort and persistence that you're putting into this, because I think anyone else in your situation probably would have given up by now, you know? And so, yeah, so I'm really just here to observe, like, you know, and hear your story. And I really appreciate everything that you've shared so far and all the attempts that you've made to get these opportunities only for, oh, but we don't want to be your first client. Oh, but, you know, like you need to be associated with the university. It's the fact that you just keep going at it anyway. I can't think of names off the top of my head, but from what I know, actually, when I think of like Ray Kroc, you know, Ray Kroc with McDonald's and all the rejection he went through for the majority of his life to eventually, you know, come across McDonald's and be the successful, you know, franchise entrepreneur he is today. It took a long time to get there. And I'm associating you with that. You know, I'm thinking like your journey is, it's still going, it's not done. And my hope for you, although I don't think it's really hope I should give, it's more like, I feel like you're very pragmatic about this at this point, but I, you know, clearly this is an issue that, you know, you won't go to sleep at night until you see some movement. And to even get your first client, your first paid contract, I think is something to be, you know, optimistic about, I would say. So yeah, I think the last thing I want to share or the last thing I want to ask of you are call to actions. Let's wrap up with like call to actions and, you know, what could be helpful for you in case anyone listens and could help. What would that look like for you to continue to move along tree culture?
I guess clients really is the most difficult thing is permission. I don't own land. I can't do it on my land. I need to do it on other people's lands. If other people mm-hmm. have lands that's next to other jurisdictions, city, water district, school district, whatever, that this is part of what makes it so difficult that the land is all broken up into these and everything's about permission. Mm-hmm. When I was going after this grant that I got from the RCD for my I had a lot of different places that I had in mind that it could be great here, it would be great there, all places in and around the city. All problem always came down to there's always like somebody that would need to give their permission and they're going to ask a lot of questions and it's taking too long. So the site that I actually got the project on was owned by a single individual. And that single individual was really excited about what I'm doing. And she gave me permission and we got written permission that, yes, I can. So then I had full permission. Then I was able to get the contract. So clients, that's really the big thing. I really need to focus on San Diego County, people that are involved in organizations, institutions. It could be industrial. It could be residential. There just need to be trees. If there's trees and it's like outside 100 feet and there's like tree area, there's what that can be done. And it's going to be about getting it done bit by bit and moving through. And I don't know another way, but mm-hmm. yeah, the one thing I need the most is clients.
Yeah. So when you see trees, think of Moshe. We'll try to come up with like a slogan or something to help with that messaging.
Yeah, but I dream of the long stretches along the highways when I drive down the highways. All this food that's not being eaten.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Moshe, I think this was a very educational conversation today. I want to thank you for bringing awareness for what you do. And, you know, just again, kudos to you and persisting with the bureaucracy and the red tape and the constant of asking permission and getting all the no's. I think that my hope for you is that your tenacity will pay off in a great way, because big problem, simple solution, great opportunity. And my hope for you is that you continue to persist at it, because clearly it's a problem that has been given to you to solve. We just need to get the yeses, you know, and so that's my hope for you.
Well, thank you, Jen. I really appreciate speaking with you, and I appreciate you scheduling the time to hear me out. I'm very appreciative. The Rosie Network and Service to CEO, they've been really there for me at times that I so needed them, and ever thankful to that team. And I'm very grateful to be here.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time and thank you for being here. And to our listeners, we hope you'll reach out. And with that said, thanks for listening, and we'll chat with you in the next episode. Tune in next time. Hey, this is your host, Jen Amos. Thanks again for listening to today's episode of Holding Down the Fort by US Vet Wealth. Visit holdingdownthefortpodcast.com to access the full show notes of this episode, including resources mentioned and bonus content. Once again, that's holdingdownthefortpodcast.com. Lastly, stay after this outro music for something a little extra. Thanks again and chat soon. Bye for now. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the post commentary of episode 192 with Moshe Krafchow, his innovative approach to wildfire prevention, Tree Culture's vision for San Diego. I want to go ahead and remind you of the reflection question that I presented at the beginning of his episode, which is, have you ever navigated the challenges of introducing new ideas into established systems? So honestly, I think for me, when I think about this question, I don't think that I've ever had to, you know, navigate introducing new ideas into, you know, the established systems that Moshe had to do. I was very taken to hear his 20 plus year journey of trying to push for Tree Culture's initiatives. And if anything, it's just very humbling and inspiring to know his level of grit and dedication and commitment to what he's trying to do to, you know, leave a healthier world for future generations. And so, Moshe, I just wanted to commend you again for the work that you're doing. And also, I hope that you all listen in on what his understanding or what he has to do to still maintain a work-life balance and not necessarily like drop everything to run his business, you know. And it's just a good reminder, again, that for all the entrepreneurs on the show, I hope to impress upon you that they're regular people. Like, all of them are regular people, mainly with families, a number of them building their businesses on the side. And I hope to impress upon you that you could do something similar too. You may not be able to move mountains overnight, but you can still make a difference. And I do believe that Moshe is doing that in his own way. So anyway, that is my reflections for now. If you want more content here at Holding on the Fort in between the episodes, just know that you can always create a free membership in our online portal at holdingonthefortpodcast.com/portal. You'll get access to our free private podcast show called Inside the Fort, where I give a little more candid commentary, and hope that you'll join us there. Until then, thanks so much for listening, and we will chat with you again this Thursday. Bye for now.